Welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hi there, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the darkened corridors of power and shine light ahead of us to where evolution is leading. The purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right front and center to face the music and dance together so that we address problems instead of defending positions. Well, while we're sheltering in place, one of our natural pastimes has been cruising the internet for information that we're unlikely to get from mainstream corporate media, particularly as that media is beholden to certain industries and their narratives. However, even though mainstream media gets an issue wrong, doesn't mean those outside the media matrix get it right. Or as Swami says, while you hunker in the bunker, what better thing to do than debunk, debunk? Well, our guest this week, Mark Rabinowitz, has a distinct talent for debunking the bunk and sometimes debunking the debunkers, and for distinguishing conspiracy theories from conspiracy facts to help us all become more discerning about what we hear and see. Well, today's conversation is going to be very interesting because we're focusing on three movies, including one that isn't out yet. First, Contagion, the prescient theatrical film from 2011. Michael Moore's current controversial movie, Planet of the Humans, and a forthcoming documentary from Oliver Stone, JFK, Destiny Betrayed. Mark is going to use these three films to offer insights on our current New World situation. Mark Rabinowitz is a writer and researcher who focuses on the intersection of deep politics and deep ecology. He runs several websites, including Oil Empire US, peakchoice.org, and jfkmoon.org, about President Kennedy's call to end the Cold War and convert the moon race to a joint U.S.-Soviet mission. Mark is based in Eugene, Oregon, where he practices, in addition to practicing social distancing right now, he also practices permaculture and encourages relocalization as a community response to peak everything. As a researcher in the issues of peak oil and peak everything else, Mark points us toward the real issues we face as individuals, as a nation, and as a species, and he addresses the all-too-real threat of the deep state from the deeper state of love, wisdom, and spiritual awareness. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you, Steve. It's great to be on your show again, and all is well here in Eugene today.
Cool. Well, you know, one of the things I've always appreciated about your work, for those who are not yet familiar with it, is on how your, for example, peakoil.us website, you relegate stories to three categories: limited hangouts, best evidence, disinformation. Could you tell us what each of these means and maybe offer an example? And then also, how did you develop this way of thinking and seeing?
Well, at oilempire.us, I look at a number of major controversies through the lens of there are more than two opinions on any story. One of the problems with our binary mode of thinking is you either support Trump or you support Biden, you're a Democrat, you're a Republican, you're this, you're that, and reality is more nuanced and complex than that. And so for each of these three segments today, we can explore how they affect the coronavirus pandemic and people's understandings of that, Michael Moore and his friends did a movie about the limits to growth on a finite planet, and there's much more than two points of view on that. And Oliver Stone's movie highlights the removal of our 35th president for trying to turn off the Cold War, and there's many opinions on that, some of them more valuable than others. I've been a lifelong advocate, activist, environmentalist, peace proponent, and many other things, and looking at patterns about why well-intentioned efforts for social change often get derailed led me to seeing ways that our understandings get distracted and derailed. One of my favorite quotes of all time is from the historian John Judge, who spent his life working on these issues, and he said, "Just because someone says the government is lying does not mean they're telling the truth." So limited hangout is when a piece of a scandal is unveiled and people think the whole story is out there. And then at the other end of the spectrum, there's disinformation that may be partly true, but it is also partly false, and the partly false components are used to discredit any interest in the scandal itself. It's a different mode of understanding than what you see even in the alternative media, let alone the mainstream.
So part of what you're saying is that either intentionally or accidentally, sometimes bad information is right in there with the good information, which will cause people to look at that bad information that's very easily disproved and go, well, actually the entire story is phony.
Well, and there's also the problem of sometimes real information is uttered by people who you may not like, or people who you do like give out bad information. For example, with hydroxychloroquine, the drug that's in the news right now, whether it's beneficial or harmful or somewhere in between has nothing to do with Dr. Trump and his recommendations for it. It's either good, bad, or somewhere in between, and I'm not particularly interested in what comes out of his mouth or what goes into his mouth. I'm more interested in what the medical evidence is. And, you know, but people have turned it into a partisan divide, or whether you should wear face masks if going to a grocery store. You know, if you're a Democrat, you think one thing, and if you're a Republican, you might think something else. But the medical evidence doesn't care about someone's political problems.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So speaking about that particular issue, the COVID-19 that we're dealing with right now, let's take a look at that first movie, Contagion, from 2011, which incidentally I haven't seen. I think I might have seen it back then, but I didn't review it. So why don't you give us a bit of a synopsis about that? And how it might relate to where we are right now.
Well, it is kind of a rarity for a Hollywood production. The credits have a list of about a dozen virologists and public health experts who provided technical assistance to the movie. It parallels current events very closely. It's not gratuitously violent. It's actually PG-13. There's a happy ending. They found a vaccine in 4 months rather than 4 years, which is, you know, might be what we end up getting. But in their fictional scenario, which was based on a real virus called Nipah from Malaysia, also a bat virus, a quarter of the people in that story died from it. Whereas with coronavirus, estimates vary, but 1% might be correct. Some say more, some say less. Whatever the figure is, most people are not going to die from this. It's not the end of the world, but it might be the end of complacency. But if we had something with a 20 or 30% fatality rate, you would not see virus denial. You would not see people saying it's all a big hoax to dethrone Trump and change the world or whatever craziness of the day. And so in some ways, this is sort of a exercise on what we could deal with if we did have something like Nipah virus or MERS or something that we've never even heard of before. So we need to take this very seriously. And unfortunately, one of the things in the film that does not parallel real life is in that film, the government had a coherent and intelligent response. I heard the scriptwriter interviewed recently, and he said the one thing they couldn't anticipate was having someone like Trump mismanaging everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and obvious that that's one of his major talents, incidentally, is mismanagement. Very few people are as gifted at mismanagement as he is, and yet because of certain complexities of the issues, and I want to talk a little bit about this as well. That here's something that that happened very early on. High dose intravenous vitamin C was being used in Wuhan, and then also was adopted in New York. And the World Health Organization and its desire to essentially dismiss and deplatform anything that was not tested by their standards and all incidentally patentable by Big Pharma. Instructed, they had a meeting with all the social media networks, all those good guys, and basically instructed Facebook to take down Andrew Saul's page on vitamin C. He wasn't even advocating it specifically for this, although he was on the committee in Wuhan that actually established a protocol for using high-dose vitamin C in Wuhan. And if you know, when you begin to look at what is known about vitamin C, you recognize that it's been used for a long time. It's been many, many, many tests have indicated that it boosts the immune system and so on. And so here is this censorship of something that's rather innocuous. And so when you have that kind of censorship, it's very easy to for people, particularly those who are already suspect of anything that comes out of the government's collective mouth, to come to all other conclusions about what's true and what's not true. So there have been a lot of – yeah, go ahead and offer your take on that.
Well, what I think is much more important than even that is this is something that we have control over not catching. If you are not in someone else's immediate space, you're not likely to get it. I'm mostly interested in the topic of what's called fomites, which is when people speak and droplets come out of their mouth and it lands on a surface and somebody else touches that surface and touches their face, and then the virus is carried to the mouth and the respiratory system and so forth. But the virus cannot live outside of a host for any period of time. It's a socially transmitted disease, as a friend of mine puts it. And it's also an intelligence test. And I'm very concerned about the impact of the Trump supporters who are having these big rallies in various state capitals, breathing on each other in large numbers and then going back to wherever they live. And this is why our case count is likely to go up, especially in the more rural Republican areas over the next couple months, when any rational approach, which clearly we're not doing, at least everywhere, you know, this would have already come and gone by now. If we all took this seriously back in February, the crisis would be over, or at least manageable. And the U.S., as everybody now knows, is the number one epicenter of this in the world. I would recommend, among other public health experts, Lori Garrett, who almost 30 years ago wrote a book called The Coming Plague, and she is predicting that coronavirus will be a three-year crisis. And I'm not going to quibble over it's 2 years or 4 years or a year and a half or whatever, but much of the country thinks this is over now. We're winding down because businesses are reopening, And it's like with a tsunami. The first wave is usually not the biggest.
You know, go ahead.
I was just going to also say, for me, looking at it from a more visionary perspective, the best case scenario is not just about keeping the piles of corpses as small as possible. That's important. But can we see this as an opportunity to stimulate a social immune response for real resiliency, paying attention to the vulnerable, homeless, refugees, and so forth, racial discrimination? The coronavirus has impacted poor people more than rich people, and we could have a whole long discussion about that. And this is a wake-up call for the world that we're on the wrong path, and we need to care for each other.
Well, we certainly don't have the coherent leadership to take that on at this time. And because of the mistrust and divisiveness, it's going to be very difficult to get to that kind of a narrative. And, of course, there are those people who are, you know, who have alternative views of how this thing is, how we manage it. If for example, in Sweden, they've had a moderate shutdown. They've had more deaths. They've had more deaths than the neighboring countries have had from coronavirus. But then there's the argument that there's many, many, many other things that people die from that result when the economy shuts down. The people can't get other kinds of medical care. People can't go to their jobs. The stress of being unemployed. There's a stat that says that for every point of unemployment, this is true about 20 years ago, there's 37,000 people in this country die. So we have a break coming up. We're going to pick that up. I'm going to have you respond to that. And then we're going to get to our second movie, which is the movie that Michael Moore's associate produced, Planet of the Humans. We're talking with Mark Rabinowitz on WikiPolitiki.
The best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
Social distancing tip.
While the CDC urges you to avoid close contact, like hugging or shaking hands, there are other non-physical ways to say hello. Wave, wink, use sign language, salute, smile, give the peace sign, throw up an air high five, do jazz hands. Remember, stay a minimum of 6 feet or 2 arms length away from others, and stay home if you can. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Well, we're back with our guest, Mark Rabinowitz. And Mark, before we get into the Michael Moore's movie, I want to get your take on the argument that in closing down an economy, there are many, many other kinds of deaths that occur that don't get recorded, and particularly because this particular coronavirus has a death rate of about 1% instead of about 30%. Is there any validity to that point of view in your estimation?
Well, there certainly is, but if we take off all the brakes on exponential growth of the disease, we won't have much of a medical system on the other side. If you paid attention to what happened in New York City or Italy or Wuhan, China, they came on the cusp of having their medical system completely unravel. And replacing medical staff is not like ordering a factory to start back up. It takes time to train people to become doctors and nurses and so forth. And that in itself poses risks. Plus, Sweden has by far the worst outbreak in Scandinavia because they have not taken it as seriously. What they are doing is they assume that everybody's going to catch it, so why not just speed it all up to the point we get herd immunity sooner rather than later? And we'll see in the long run if that was a wise or stupid decision. You know, maybe we all will catch it. There are epidemiologists who were predicting that back in January. Maybe so, but if we catch it all at once, the medical system can't handle it. It's going to take some time for there to be really effective treatments, let alone a vaccine that's been proven to be safe and effective. That will probably happen after Trump is no longer president for a number of reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that it's really interesting that we have a number of different experiments going on, the experiments of countries and counties where they have they're going for the herd immunity thing, and we'll see what the impact is. It's wonderful that those church people in various red states are brave enough to put themselves in harm's way to prove their thesis, and time will tell as to what this
whether
is.
Will their deity protect them from disease? My guess
That's
is
right.
probably
That's,
not.
Yeah, I think you'd have to be pretty pretty evolved to get to that point. I don't think that's what's up. But I do want to get to that very controversial and very interesting movie, Planet of the Humans, which was co-produced by Michael Moore, and his associate went out and did an investigative piece on quote unquote the climate change movement, and its movie is causing quite a stir. So for those who haven't seen it, tell us what the controversy is in this movie.
Well, the controversy is it said some heretical things about what happened to the environmental movement over the last couple of decades and the role of big money and hesitation, fear of self-censorship in what they advocate. I thought the film was actually an understatement, but it made some tactical errors that it's that have allowed critics to complain about it. But Planet of the Humans focused on how so-called renewable energy will not sustain the unsustainable, that we are past the limits to growth on a finite planet, that the Democratic Party did a leveraged buyout of groups like Sierra Club and others. Now, I've used solar panels for about 30 years now. I'm using them to power my telephone to talk to you and the computer I'm sitting in front of. But it's a temporary solution because it takes fossil fuels and minerals to make solar panels and the control equipment and the computer chips in the control equipment and the wire and all of that kind of stuff. And what the Democratic Party environmental groups rarely hint at is not only do we need efficiency, but we have to change the way we live, that we can't expect to have nonstop airplane rides whenever we feel like it, or to get all of our food from other continents. That is a very temporary phenomenon in human history. We live like medieval kings, except they did not have oranges in January like we do. And recession and now coronavirus shutdowns have done more to reduce fossil fuel combustion than any climate activism. And I don't see very many of these groups even discussing the implications of that. One of the tactical mistakes in the movie, and there are several, apart from the fact there's not much humor in it, which I think Swami would approve.
For a Michael Moore movie, that's yeah, exactly.
But, you know, the Jeff Gibbs, who's the main person in the film, and it's really his film more than Michael's, is he focused a lot on the practice of burning trees to generate electricity, which accelerates deforestation and therefore climate change and extinction of non-humans and all the rest. But there's many other places where these groups are promoting absurdities, like carbon credits, that if you take an airplane ride, you give someone money, and then you offset your environmental impact, like medieval indulgences from the Catholic Church. And there's a really fine short, it's about 12 minutes, movie on YouTube called Cheat Neutral, which I can't recommend highly enough. There's also some of the leading lights in the climate movement are trying to sell us on the idea that we need more nuclear reactors to supposedly offset climate change, even though they emit a lot of heat, they're extremely dangerous, and there's no way to detoxify the nuclear waste. I mean, you could go through a long list of things, but we're going to have to change the way we live. We're going to have to tear up suburban lawns and parking lots and grow food and recognize that the earth is not flat. The earth is not getting bigger. It's abundant, but it's round and finite. And we've known this for decades. One of the other sacred cows that was gored was mentioning that.
So to speak. Gored, yeah. So to speak, yes.
Gored, so to speak. Al Gored, so to speak.
Yeah.
Is overpopulation. You know, in my lifetime, 56 years, world population's more than doubled. Since 9/11, we've had 1.5 billion new higher population. That's more than at the start of the oil age total, which was 1.2 billion. And it's a touchy topic because you don't want to say, well, I hate people who live in other parts of the world, but you cannot have infinite growth on a finite planet, and that includes population. There's also overconsumption, but the real issue is denial.
You know, it's interesting that you say that because in a certain regard, the liberal side can point to the conservative climate change deniers, and, you know, they deny that the whole thing is happening. And yet there's another level of denial, which you point out, which is in terms of lifestyle, in terms of what the flyover country people look at as being very hypocritical. I mean, why is Al Gore living in a, you know, mansion like he's living and flying all over the place and using up fossil fuels and using resources just to tell us to not use fossil fuels and resources? And the other thing is that very, very few of the mainstream environmental movements are really talking about the importance of restoring the soil and really totally changing how food is grown in this country.
And the environmental groups are afraid to suggest that people might want to get their fingers dirty in the soil of their backyard and grow vegetables or teach people how to do permaculture or set up bicycle repair cooperatives or transition towns or a million other things. And it's not that everyone needs to do everything, but to do nothing and just have protests and petitions and complaints, that's just hot air. That doesn't change things very much. And yes, it's important to focus on corporate and governmental misbehavior, but a big chunk of it is also we, the people, for the most part, want these things. When you look at the pressure all over the country to reopen restaurants right now, I'm convinced a lot of it is because a huge number of people don't even know how to cook food that they like to eat. And so going out
to
restaurants...
Yeah, people do like to
eat. Well, unless they're a breatharian, of course, right? But...
Well, you know, this is really true. And there is, there is such a thing as kind of this environmental industrial complex of organizations that essentially self-perpetuate by holding a narrative, but really not making the fundamental changes in how we need to live. Because basically, if one wanted to be cynical, they could say, "Well, being an environmentalist is a lifestyle choice, and much more of a surface lifestyle choice than one that goes deep enough to make a genuine difference."
Well, and a lot of the environmental movement has become what used to be called an auxiliary to a political party. So when Obama or Clinton approve a pipeline, they largely stay quiet. But when Bush or now Trump approve a pipeline that's similar, they complain at 300 decibels. Whereas if they could look at whether something is good or bad for the environment, that transcends political partisanship. There used to be more of a space for pseudo-environmentalists in the Republican Party, and that's mostly gone now. But in the Democratic Party, it's mostly greenwashing and not substance. Obama and Clinton did not replicate the environmental era of the 60s and 70s. The last president who took it seriously was Carter, and even that was a mixed bag. And some of that could have been highlighted better in the film, but to do a really good job, you would need 10 hours or 10 days of documentaries, because most of this information is rarely touched on anywhere. It's just a political jostling point to say, oh, well, the other people are bad, or our side is good, and that just makes it all a shouting match, and meanwhile, the environment gets worse.
Yep. Now, when looking at that film, what was there something that was really, like, you would say, really, really compelling that people need to pay attention to?
Well, the most important point is we have passed the limits to growth on a finite planet. If you go back to 1972, there was a study called Limits to Growth, and it predicted that around the turn of the century, we would reach the maximum ability to extract resources from the world, and this is both fossil fuels and trees and fish and fresh water. You know, it's not just the stuff you have to mine. We're using all of the renewable resources faster than they can regenerate. I wish the film, if they did a sequel called Battle for the Planet of the Humans or Return to the Planet of the Humans or something like that, I hope that they would discuss permaculture and regeneration in addition to what's wrong with traditional foundation-funded environmentalism, because there are many things we can do to restore damaged ecosystems, apart from just leaving them alone to regenerate on their own self. But that sort of cooperation is getting short attention, and it's interesting with coronavirus, gardening at the home scale is taking off almost to the level of victory gardens in World War II now. You go to any garden store, and that's the most popular part of any garden hardware store right now. And we've known for a long time that not shipping food 2,000 miles is, we need to have it local in our communities. There are countries that are almost totally dependent on food imports. Even Britain, they fly vegetables from Kenya, Africa on airplanes, which is crazy.
Right.
And we're going to have to totally change food. One of the things I find amusing is that coronavirus is an acronym for carnivorous, because coronavirus, like SARS and MERS and HIV/AIDS, all came from bushmeat. And there's some debate over some of the exact transmissions of some of those, but factory farming at a large scale for meat is dangerous to humans. And this is not an animal rights concern, although you could make that argument. It's that growing billions of farm animals amplifies disease. We know this. This has been known for decades. And now you have the meat system in our country breaking down because the wage slaves who work in the slaughterhouses are getting sick because their bosses are not allowing them to protect themselves. And where this is going is anybody's guess, but clearly this is a once-in-a-generation transformation of the food system underway.
Well, you know, I think it's calling attention to the factory farms. I think one of the first stories had to do, I think it was with Purdue Chicken, where they were having to essentially slaughter and discard without selling all of this, all of these, I guess you could call them chickens because they're just kind of barely chickens. And then of course there's the other aspect of that, which has to do with completely factory grown food. You know, when the so-called green revolution, quote unquote, which is of course another oxymoronic phrase, they really want to have essentially artificial essentially nutrition-free food. So we're at the point where we can relocalize, as you are suggesting that people are doing. Oh, we're going to be back after this message with Mark Rabinowitz. Wrap this conversation up and begin the conversation about our third movie that we're going to be talking about. Steve Behrman here on WikiPoliticky.
Free your mind with OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Are you done with the daily barrage of negativity? Ready for some positivity? Creations Magazine has been inspiring the soul for over 30 years, delivering thought-provoking and solution-driven articles, essays, and poetry that inspire you to enjoy a vibrant life. Holistic health, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, the environment, and so much more. Read us online or order a subscription, creationsmagazine.com.
911, what is your emergency?
Where's the wounds?
911, what's your emergency?
Please, help. My son shot his brother.
911, what is your emergency?
911, please state your emergency.
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns.
It wasn't locked.
Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Well, hello there. This is Steve Behrman. We're back with our guest, Mark Rabinowitz. Time has really zipped by here. Anything further to say about factory farming and perhaps the changes that might be in store for us if this lockdown continues for months, if not more than a year, in regards to that kind of food?
I'll just say one thing about factory farming in the U.S. as opposed to wet markets in Asia, which is getting more attention right now, and for good reason. Most of the antibiotics used in America are given to cows, pigs, and chickens, not human beings, and this has bred antibiotic resistance, which in the long run may rival, if not surpass, coronavirus as a public health threat. It's a very different approach, but it's to slightly speed up the rate at which you can harvest chickens on a feed line. And you can go back to the 1960s and see medical experts who warned that this was a really dumb idea.
Well, I think in general, our food has become less foodier and more manufactured, and there's been a disregard to the actual natural nutrients. When you talked about permaculture earlier, when you're really in a whole system where the livestock is actually eating the grass, pooping, moving, recycling, and all of this all works together to feed the microbiome of the soil. We got about 15 minutes left. I want to definitely get into the movie that's not out yet, Oliver Stone's forthcoming documentary, JFK, Destiny Betrayed. So you obviously know something or suspect something about this movie before it comes out. So why don't you tell us?
Well, I have not seen the movie. I don't think they even have a final version of it yet, but I'm not entirely sure of that. But two ways you can know what the film will be is it's a documentary on President Kennedy's foreign policies and how they differ from his predecessors and those who followed him, and certainly what we're dealing with now. And I highly recommend Oliver Stone's documentary from 1990, not documentary, dramatization, but sort of a documentary, from 1991, JFK, which got attacked by the media more than any other product from Hollywood ever. You had media attacks on it while they were still filming it. You had left-wing people attacking it, like Noam Chomsky and Alexander Coburn and The Nation magazine, were not any more enamored of the film than The Washington Post and The New York Times and people like that. So Destiny Betrayed is strictly a documentary, not a reenactment of what happened, but it focuses on why. The scriptwriter is Jim DiEugenio, who's written several books on the coup against President Kennedy. His website is KennedysandKing.com, Kennedy's plural, and King.com. And he is focused more on the why Kennedy was removed from office rather than how many bullets were fired in Dealey Plaza and how that debunks the idea that one person did all of the shooting. We're past that. We're decades past that. That's not even really an argument to focus any energy on at this point. What enabled the CIA and the military industrial complex to remove the president and get away with it? Apathy, fear, disbelief that such a thing could actually happen in the democracy of America, the world's greatest country. Well, Kennedy tried to call off the Cold War and the arms race, normalize relations with Cuba. He signed an order to withdraw from Vietnam just before he was removed from office. What would the 60s have been if that order had been implemented and the war in Vietnam ended in Kennedy's second term? I like the idea of that parallel universe where things turned out right instead of wrong. You never would have heard of Donald Trump in that circumstance. And if we had a pandemic, we might actually have a government that was caring about people rather than making a good show for crazy people, to be blunt.
Now, a few weeks ago on my show here, I had Gerald Posner, who's a journalist who has a new book out, Condemnation of Big Pharma. And after I booked him on the show, I went back and tracked his record. And I went, oh, my God, he actually wrote a book defending. He called it case closed. Case closed. Oswald did it by himself. The Warren Report is absolutely correct. And I'm just wondering, what's going on?
Well, he was clearly hired to do that. He got ample media coverage everywhere when he came out with this book. If I remember correctly, he did not even discuss in detail that the House Select Committee on Assassinations in 1978 concluded that, yes, more than one person shot at President Kennedy, but then they decided, oh, we're out of time, we're out of money to investigate it further. The evidence for this is overwhelming. You even have some of the Kennedy family have come clean now and said, yes, the CIA did it, not Oswald. But the real issue is the motive, and the motive is the policies of the president. And saying that the war machine has to be stopped for planetary survival is the bottom line. It's worth noting also that Nikita Khrushchev, the head of the Soviet Union, was also deposed a few months afterward, but he was allowed to live in retirement at his dacha, his country house, and secretly write his memoirs, whereas Kennedy, of course, was not allowed to do that. And most people suspect there's something to the story, but what the alternative narrative is all over the place. You know, so not every claim on the Kennedy assassination is correct. Some of them are true, and some of them are ludicrous. And sifting through that is not a skill that's encouraged in our popular culture.
You know, the book that you recommended to me a number of years ago, before the 50th anniversary of the assassination, was JFK and the Unspeakable, Why He Died and Why It Matters. And, the Kennedy assassination was the event that the term conspiracy theory was designed for. So all these things that we've been hearing for the last 50 years, conspiracy theory, essentially that was a term that was popularized and used by the CIA to discourage people from poking around the Kennedy assassination thing. So here is the thing that is the ultimate conspiracy theory. And here you are, and you've debunked a number of other, you know, spurious kinds of theories. Here you are with using the book JFK and the Unspeakable. You're saying, no, this is not a conspiracy theory. This is a conspiracy fact. So what makes you so certain about it?
Well, the issue is, first, there's a huge amount of declassified documents and whistleblowers and historical investigations that have gone on for decades, including the congressional investigation during the Carter era. There's the obvious ludicrous impossibilities of the official story from the Warren Dulles Commission. The Warren Commission was really run by Alan Dulles, who was fired by Kennedy as director of the CIA. And, you know, if you're murdered violently after having an argument with your neighbor, and your neighbor is then appointed by an investigative panel to say what happened, most people would go, well, that's not honest. And Dulles violently hated Kennedy. He was totally opposed to what he was doing. And then he's made the de facto head of the investigative committee. I mean, that's just, plus you had other members of the Warren Commission who were less politically toxic, who privately later admitted that the whole thing was bogus. So there's no question that the CIA was involved and other elements of the government, not the whole CIA, not the whole rest of the federal government, but it reversed key policies. Kennedy's order to withdraw from Vietnam was reversed immediately after his body was put in the ground. And that led to 58,000 dead Americans and millions of dead Vietnamese, Laotians, and Cambodians. And it was so toxic to our society, culturally, psychologically, we're still dealing with the consequences today.
Exactly, exactly. It's interesting that right at the outset of the coronavirus is when Bob Dylan released his long song, Murder Most Foul, which is very clearly about, which is obviously about the Kennedy assassination. And I think maybe it's, well, here we are, apocalyptic times lifting the veils. Maybe it's time that we acknowledged all of this. And I've certainly felt, and interestingly, even Gerald Posner, because I asked him about it. That song had just come out, and I asked him about that. And he said, clearly, the Kennedy assassination has that devastated and damaged generations. And, you know, it kind of set the stage for my generation. You're at the tail end of the baby boomers. I'm much more at the beginning of that. And that entire generation of people who were, what were you, a few months old when it happened, or maybe a few weeks old?
2 months.
Right? 2 months old. But for those of us who were kids or teenagers, it was devastating, and it took us so much by surprise, and this is even after the Cuban Missile Crisis the year before, that nobody really wanted to, it was not possible for people to right away begin to talk about, like, you know, this was an inside job, even though I'm sure there were many people who knew it. And as you would probably point out, that year, in fact, it was maybe a few weeks after the assassination, Harry Truman wrote an op-ed for the New York, I think it was the Washington Post or the New York Times, talking about how we need to, Washington Post, curb the power of the CIA, and it was answered by nobody. It was, fell onto silence. Do you recall that?
It was called Limit the CIA to Intelligence, and it struck a nerve to the point that Alan Dulles went to Missouri to try to talk Harry Truman into changing his mind on this. And I'm no fan of Harry Truman's legacy, which includes Hiroshima and the start of the Cold War, but the Kennedy assassination was apparently too much for him. And it's worth reading. If you search for it, you'll find it many places. To conclude, I'd like to call attention to something that both Oliver Stone and his scriptwriter, Jim DiEugenio, are involved in, which is called the Truth and Reconciliation Committee. And it's an effort to set up a national effort through Congress to examine these assassinations, not from the perspective of punishment, because most of the perpetrators are long gone, but for recognizing we have to transcend this mindset for our society and civilization to function. And unfortunately, the liberal alternative media have ignored it. Most of the mainstream media has ignored it too, but it did get some very good coverage in the Washington Post, of all places. And in South Africa, after apartheid, they had a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which gave amnesty to perpetrators of horrible crimes if they would tell all in public. And that sort of approach has its problems too, but it may shift things in ways that allow us to move beyond the shouting and the blaming and the scapegoating and the perpetration of endless militarism, because the resources we collectively spend on war are the resources we would need to spend on peace. When Kennedy called off the arms race and the moon race at the United Nations, one of the things he called for was setting up global efforts to deal with public health and prevent epidemics. We don't have a president who is terribly interested in that right now, and we risk hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Americans dying from this, and far more around the world. So we have tremendous talents for civilization, but if it gets in the way of greed of the Alan Dulleses of the world, the whole Titanic may sink without a trace. This is a preventable problem, but not with milquetoast approaches to the problems that we have. And we have to move beyond anger and blame and grief, too, to reach acceptance.
Yep. And right now it's very important that people are part of the uprising, and people are waking up to recognize that the neoliberal order in the Democratic Party, and this even extends to Bernie Sanders and that wing of the party, are really unwilling to confront these deeper truths of the actual power structure in this country, and the fact that the Democratic elites in a certain regard are as responsible for the overuse of our resources, despite what they say, as the conservative elites. And in coming to that healing, I really am so glad that you ended this with truth and reconciliation, because that's what we need. The truth shall upset you free. Thank you, Mark Rabinowitz, for being our guest today on WikiPolitiki to help us shine the light on and darken the corridors of power. Thank you again, Mark.
Goodbye.
We'll be back next week on WikiPolitiki.